I'm just waiting for my meal to be served to me, and
It's
then
not gonna
we'll be
happen.
ready to go.
It's not, I'm sorry.
You two are in the same room, right, or no?
Yes.
I'm literally at the same desk as
Our
you.
knees are touching, we're so close.
Oh, that's nice. You make an eye contact?
No.
Never.
Never.
Are you kidding me?
Ever. Alright, here we go. Clear your minds, everybody. Brian, in the Venn diagram of podcasting.
I have one here on my wall.
Yes, you'll notice in the slice where we overlap this show, How Was Your Run Today?
Mm-hmm.
And another mother runner.
We overlap?
We just barely. And here's how.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you understand.
Okay, I'm listening.
Of course, we both talk about running.
True.
But the other way we overlap is super fan Michael Goff.
Woo woo!
Wow.
Yes, a woo woo indeed.
He is connected to both podcasts.
He is, because he is longtime friends with our guest right now, Sarah Bowen Shea. Hello, Sarah.
Welcome, Sarah.
Hello, Peter and Brian. Thanks for having me on and having us intersect in something other than a Venn diagram.
In real space, in real time.
Yep, yep.
I'm guessing that your connection with Michael must go back to rowing somehow.
It does. It does. It goes back to Colgate rowing. And Colgate University is actually the, if we keep with the Venn diagram thing, that's how my business partner, Dimity McDowell, and I know each other, is through Colgate rowing.
Oh, no
so,
kidding.
Yeah.
So you've spent winters in the snowy, frigid, gray New York
Shenango
State
Valley.
Area,
Shenango
yeah.
Valley. I know from clouds that are so low and omnipresent, you could almost touch them.
Yeah, I spent 5 years in Syracuse, so I know when that dome comes over the city and doesn't leave until about mid-May.
You know, Brian, when you started asking the question, I was like, I get a Syracuse vibe off of this question. So I'll meet you at Wegmans and we can reminisce.
That's right. We'll have some wings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some taters. Yeah.
That's right.
So I know from running in very, very frigid, snowy conditions, that's where I got my start as a runner. So I toughened up quickly.
Is that right? So crew brought the rower out in you?
It did. It brought out the inner athlete in me. And yes, I ran a tiny, tiny bit in high school, but really didn't. I was not athletic as a child, not athletic. I was one of two people cut from my high school lacrosse team, even though they weren't supposed, it was a no cut sport. They just left my best friend and I off the list. And there was a silent agreement not to ask why we weren't on the list.
Clear.
Yeah.
That's right.
So then I went to Colgate and took up rowing to alleviate boredom and be outside and meet just the people that I just to this day still love with all my heart. So I adored it. And
That's tremendous. Is that also what drove you to the Pacific Northwest, the winters in central New York?
It is not. So from Colgate, I spent my freshman spring break at visiting a friend who was at Cal Berkeley and thought I had died and gone to warm, sunny, frozen yogurt heaven.
You're not the only person who's had that experience.
And so, and my father, when I was very young, had said that he thought I would like living in San Francisco. And so I lived there for 4 years and then Boston, for 4 years. Yeah, and then back to San Francisco, and then a job with now out of business Lucy Activewear brought me to the Pacific Northwest. So,
Wow.
How's that?
That's a good journey.
And yes.
And then Michael became your friend at Colgate. You guys meet there.
At Colgate, he was the coxswain on the men's team. So the, as you guys know, the small person who steers and encourages the rowers and steers the boat. And then I was on the women's rowing team and took up running as a way to get fit and cross train. And Bingham, I mean, when it's sunny out, it's a or not totally overcast, it's a very, very pretty part of the country. And so, you know, I enjoyed being out and about. And then when I graduated from college, back then to be, you had to be over 25 to be a rower, a master's rower. So I was too young. So, and I lived at that point in San Francisco. And so I took to running because it was an inexpensive alternative, and talk about a great place to be outdoors in San Francisco. Yeah.
The you did, you place. Probably never ran on a treadmill on that side of the country.
Oh my gosh. I also, like, I remember, going past a gym that was quite small and had treadmills that were right smack up against the window. This is in the Cow Hollow section of San Francisco. And it'd be just a beautiful day, and there'd be people running on a treadmill. I'm like, what are you doing? Get outside.
Right.
So, I mean, I do, I love, I'm very, very pro Portland. I, you know, think it's a fabulous, fabulous place to live for many reasons. And partly because I can run outdoors year round. And I just love being outside. I love interacting with nature. And I just feel like there's a sort of osmosis that goes on with me here. Like, this is where I was meant to be. Despite being kind of Connecticut-y, that's where I grew up. I'm still kind of East Coast-y, but in my attitude.
But not in your wardrobe, because you don't have to be.
I'm not wearing Birkenstocks or clogs right now.
Of course, because you're barefoot.
No. So, yeah, you know, and I did, I shaved my legs and my pits on Sunday, so, you know. But it'll be another week until I do that. So.
Well, I did that too. I mean, that's, yeah. Come on. All right.
Did I ever share?
No,
that's part of our training.
It's just
plan,
what
actually.
We have to do. So the runner part comes first. The mother part came second.
Mm-hmm.
When
yes.
did you know from a strategic?
That I was pregnant?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Really personal question.
Wow. You know, I see. So you do the TMI thing for real. That's not just a joke. Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Let's get into Kate Middleton and carrying that baby. Too soon?
Oh my gosh, let's get into Kate Middleton being in a dress, and I assume possibly with pantyhose. Please let them be thigh highs. You know, what, 7 hours after giving birth?
I think it's more like 17 hours later. I don't think it's seven. I think.
Do you think they faked the birth time?
I have a whole theory that.
Really?
Yeah. To catch the news cycle across, yes, I do believe so.
I actually think that she's somewhat of a superhuman being and can just do these things.
I think so, too.
What about Rachel Weisz, the actress who's 48, pregnant right now? I think that's terrific. Go nuts.
Yeah. Well, there's a backstory behind there that will not be shared, I'm sure. So,
Okay.
So, but, you know, I mean, please, I get pregnant just looking at Daniel Craig, who's her husband, so. And then I wake up.
You and me both. I just saw, have you seen the movie Logan Lucky from this past year?
No, didn't even hear about it.
It's the Steven Soderbergh heist movie from last, I want to say, summer or fall. And it didn't do very well in the theater, but it's a heist movie. It's very fun. It's PG-13, so kid-friendly. And Daniel Craig is unbelievable in it.
Oh, man. Oh, my gosh. He just, he fills out a pair of jeans like nobody's business. Oh,
wow,
him in Munich. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a lot right here. This is good. So... To circle back.
What was the question? Yes.
Yeah, so the runner part came first. The mother part came second. When did you know strategically you wanted to make hay of another mother runner? It starts as a blog.
Yeah.
And,
you know, and
what drove you? What was the spark?
And I have to say, Peter, you have an interesting cadence when you say another mother runner. Like, to me, it's like running downhill. I just kind of trip from one to the other, and they're all downhill. You're another mother runner.
Oh, so it should go another mother runner down that way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another
mother
runner? Because that makes it sound like it's a question, and I don't want that.
No. Then you get vocal fry in there, too. Yeah, no.
Another mother runner.
She's in another mother runner.
Oh, we get a lot of that because our first book is called Run Like a Mother. And I remember my business partner, Dimity McDowell, and I, we were journalists before all this. And when it started, and I'll get to answering your question in a sec, but so we were on a press trip, and I remember there was a guy who's in the running industry, Brian Metzler, and he kept on just saying, another mother runner, And I'm like, okay, yes, you know, or run like a mother. And I'm like, uh-huh, yep. It was funny the first time you said it.
And do you find it's men who do the different pronunciation and the women get it right away? Or have you also heard it said differently by women?
No, I was intrigued because when you introduced me, you did it that way as well. So, no, I think that as I tell the people from Wells Fargo, when I call up to like authenticate our checking account, you know, and they're like, oh yes, in the name of your business, I'm like another mother runner, and I always think, oh, they know I'm for real because I can say it really fast.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So Dimity and I, back to the question, we were friends for a long time, and like I said, we our original connection was through Colgate Rowing. Dimity's a little bit younger than I am, but we met at a Colgate Rowing alumni event. And so she was pregnant with her second child. She has two kids. I have three, including boy-girl twins. And she had suffered from postpartum depression after the birth of her first child. And so when she was pregnant with her second, she thought, oh, I need to have a goal after I give birth to this kid, and that will, you know, kind of ensure that she gets out, be active, hopefully elevate her mood. And so she thought, I need to train for a marathon, because, you know, she was, I guess, you know, feeling kind of crazy. And so she thought, who can I call that will say yes when I ask them? And she thought of me. So I said yes, thinking that she'd forget. And then she came back a year later and was like, yeah, hey, let's do this. So we wrote about, that was 2007 that we trained for and chronicled our path to the Nike Women's Marathon, you know, which, as you guys know, is no longer in existence. And so from that, and we wrote about that as a feature for Runner's World, and we blogged about it on runnersworld.com. We were the Marathon Moms. And we realized there was this amazing community of women runners that kind of hadn't been coalesced. And Dim was like, hey, let's write a book for them. So we got a book contract, and in 2010, and meanwhile, we're still kind of blogging a little bit. And so in 2010, our first book, Run Like a Mother, came out, which
thank you. Now I understand.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Run Like a
Mother. Well, yeah. And some a lot, we did not intend for there to be an unheard expletive after that phrase. And but it's funny that sometimes we'll go to race expos and people will be like, oh, that's so funny. I'm like, yeah, no, it's not meant to be. Our brand name's not meant to be funny. Our book titles aren't meant to be funny. But if you want to laugh at them, then you go right ahead. So another word that ends E-R, let's just say that. So our first book came out, and we knew that we had to promote it on social media. So we started a Facebook page and kept blogging and, you know, went on Twitter. And we, like I said, we were journalists. We never set out to grow a business or a brand, and it just grew organically from there. And it has grown to encompass three books and our podcast, which we started in 2011, an online store that has merchandise, a training programs through trainlikeamother.club, really, really robust, engaged social media. We have running retreats. We speak at race expos. I could keep going on and on. We got a lot of branches on the AMR tree.
Well, what I guess I'm really interested in 2011, when you started podcasting, which mm-hmm. is sort of in the history of podcasting, is still kind of early on. It's mm-hmm. it's still Wild Westy, but starting to get sort of settled, and the frontier is being filled up. But back then, especially, it wasn't. And what triggered you guys to say, oh yeah, doing I think it was it every 2 weeks back then, or give or take?
Look at you, man. Peter, you totally know your stuff. Yes, we were biweekly every other week back then, until maybe sometime in 2012. Let's give that as the answer. We switched to weekly. And we actually, a podcast company approached us, and I knew that it was a husband and wife. The company's no longer in business. And the wife, I knew her through the running world here in Portland. And so they just thought we had a good story to tell. And
sure.
So, and it was fun. I mean, Dim and I have been friends for a long time. We really love chatting with each other. We, you know, are kind of like sisters. We have, you know, love and esteem each other greatly. And so, and kind of the gift for gab. So I know I'm being shy and reserved now, but believe, I can actually chat a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, you're super shy. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I hold my cards close to the vest. Yeah.
You must have a lot of practice at running a conversational pace.
I am. Yes, you could ask my running partner. I do chat a lot on the run. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when did you know Like, how many episodes in did it hit you guys? Oh, wow, this is actually a pretty big deal. This will actually be something that we have to...
Well, become a business.
Become really. A business, yeah. Where does that switch happen for you?
Probably, so we launched, our first book, Run Like a Mother, came out in March of 2010. And in late November 2011, I decided, I made a paradigm shift in my mind that I was, by that point we'd named our brand Another Mother Runner. I decided that that was my main job and that I was freelancing on the side. Whereas before that, I was always a freelancer who did AMR on the side. So I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but just shifting that in my mind, that for me, that's when AMR really, so it was almost 2 years in before it was like, okay, yeah, this is my job. And then probably 6 or 7 months later is when I stopped doing all my freelance writing.
Yeah, no, that doesn't sound ridiculous at all. I think it's one of those things where you have to make the mental switch, not unlike serious running itself, right? Or training for something. You have to decide mentally first, this is how I identify. This is what I am. Because it's about priorities.
It is. And, you know, I made the same type of paradigm shift with I then, like I said, you used to have to be over 25 to be a master's rower. And then I did come back to rowing as a master's age person. And finally, in about, 2008 or so, that's when I decided I was a runner and not a rower who ran. Mm-hmm. So that was a big deal for me, even though by that point I'd already run, I don't know, a few marathons and three, four maybe. And finally I was like, oh, okay, I think this running thing, I think that's my number one thing. So.
But you also bought another mother rower just in case.
We did not. Oh. Quick, get that URL. Go, get on GoDaddy now.
No, I already have it. Sorry.
We have four books about rowing out right now.
Yeah, with all our books. All our published books are about rowing.
So, yeah. So, it was, and then, you know, so then our second book, Train Like a Mother, came out in 2012, and that's definitely when in-person events really started to pick up. And, our first book tour was, like a cemetery meets a bowling alley. There were just no, it was deserted, long lines of nothing. But gosh, we still have some of those original, fans and mother runners who showed up for those, and I greatly value those people and remember each and every one of them. Then 2012, we decided that having a traditional book tour was not the thing to do. So we would go and have mother runner parties at the homes of women runners in across the country. And it was amazing how receptive women were to being like, yeah, sure, I'll host a party for you for 60 people that I don't know at my house. And we would give them like, I don't know, $300 to cover alcohol and, you know, light refreshments. And it was just, oh my gosh, those parties were so much fun. And because we decided it was just a lot less intimidating to go to, you know, absolutely, Rebecca's house, yeah, you know, sure, rather than like, oh my gosh, I have to parallel park if I go to Powell's. How am I going to do that? So
you also
then,
can't karaoke at Powell's.
That's why we're thinking about actually doing karaoke at one of our retreats. So then we grew out of people's houses. And so then we started having parties at running stores. And then, and now we occasionally, the only parties we do are occasionally we do live podcast record or podcast recorded in front of live audience. We don't stream them live.
Excellent.
This is Brian. This is all really helpful since we're just two guys who are trying to follow in your footsteps precisely. It sounds like our next move to build our running podcast empire is basically house parties.
Okay. Yeah, it is. And the other day, Dimity was like, we got to bring back the fire. Like, we got to bring back the magic. And she was like, the magic happened at those mother runner parties. And so that's why we're going to do more podcast recording parties.
We just have to stay on this side of the Mississippi. We have to.
Then that's unfair because you have a higher population out there. But we also do, we crisscross this entire country, man. I have seen a lot of the U.S. and it's one of my many favorite parts of being another mother runner is getting to see so many different parts of the U.S. and meeting people in all those places, which sounds really like a bogus pablum, but I mean it sincerely.
No, absolutely. And quite frankly, Peter and I, in our wild fantasies, occasionally we'll talk about doing that, you know, like filling up a van and going across and showing up at races and telling people we're going to be there and things like that. If we had the free time or the dedication to do it, I suppose.
Well, that's it. That's why we thought, I forget what summer we were talking, I think maybe 2013, I was like, hey, Tim, we got to just get in the minivan and just go for like 3 weeks. And mm-hmm. we were all hopped up on it. And then suddenly it was like, wah, wah, and reality, reality set in. And, you know, we started to like, look at how our husbands dealt, our respective husbands dealt with our respective kids. Mm-hmm. And like, oh yeah, that would get really tiring. And also to maintain this, you know, empire that we have, you know, who would run the proverbial store while we were on the road? So, we did one in, in 2015, our third book, Tales from Another Mother Runner, came out. And so we did had a party in, a suburb, north and slightly west of Boston. And then we drove to Syracuse and had a party there. And then we drove to part of New Jersey, just across the river from New York, from Manhattan. So it can, you know, it can be done.
And yeah, you got to go regional. You got to do sort of say, well, we'll do these 3 to 4 over this number of days.
And yeah, that's what we did, and it's very tiring but very exhilarating at the same time.
Oh, it must be very rewarding.
Well, we'll just have to find people who are willing to let us into their house. And a bunch of people they don't know.
That's
unlikely.
Work. I'm pretty sure this is where the divide starts.
That's right.
Right here.
Yeah.
Now, speaking to that, actually, so your audience primarily, of course, as a target is women because it's about mothers. But what have you seen over the decade or so that this has been happening? Are you getting fathers? Are you getting male runners who aren't parents, women runners who aren't parents? Do you see a wide swath?
We do. I mean, our name somewhat sounds limiting, but it's not. I mean, you know, Michael Goff is a testament to we have father runners. We have guys come up to us at race expos, and, you know, they've taken their pictures with us because they totally love the podcast. They've wanted to buy our shirts, and I'm like, oh, they're women's cut.
I would be fine with that.
We get that, and then also we definitely have a lot of women who – you know, listen to the podcast, read our blog, read our books, whatever, that are not moms, or, you know, we sometimes say they're moms of fur babies or whatever, but we definitely get a lot of women who are not moms who are part of our tribe.
Well, I have a question touching on how you sort of made the transition and how you felt about it, making the transition from sort of chatting about your own running and then giving running advice, you know, written down in a book. That's a big step.
Hubris.
Hubris, that was it.
But then to go to training programs, which you
correct, and taking the next step and hosting training or having training programs that people can buy off of the AMR site.
So we have coaches. I mean, Dimity is a certified, you know, what is that, RRCA? She's a certified coach, but she doesn't practice. That makes it sound like. But we have the plans in Train Like a Mother were developed by Coach Christine Hinton, who is a very avid trainer. She's the running coach out of she's in Maryland. And then the Train Like a Mother Club, we have a whole stable of coaches all the way up. We have MK Fleming, who does our heart rate training. We have Stephanie Howe Violet. She has won one of the big ultra marathons, and she's our ultra coach, which, yes, I'm bragging. And then, we have two triathlon coaches. We have, a nutritionist. We have an exercise, like a sports psychologist. So we bring in experts for the Train Like a Mother Club. But to answer your question, Brian, we were used to giving advice because of our many decades, you know, close to 2 decades of being freelance magazine writers. So we'd interviewed just a slew of experts. And then, you know, our books are not hard and fast, like, here's exactly what you need to be doing and here's the split you need to do it at. It's very conversational, anecdotal. You know, we're not doing things that are going to be live or die by them. So, because a lot of it is just really our experience and how it is, how other people can see themselves in that experience.
It sounds like you had an idea and you worked really hard and then it would come to be, you know, we'll add a book, we'll do a house, we'll do some house tours, we'll create, some course content, and now these retreats. Have you had any catastrophic failures or really, really bad days that have been made you think twice about this venture?
Well, I should say up front that I am an optimist to my very core. So, and I am a very much a glass half full type of gal. So we definitely, Dim and I, for a long time, it was just Dimity and me. And now we have contractors who do work for us. So it's not just a duo doing all of this. Dim and I worked very, very hard and poured a lot of ourselves into it, getting a lot back from the community. Don't get me wrong, but it was, it was a lot of work. And, we just always kind of naively felt like it was going to succeed to a level that, that we were happy with, that could be our, the compensation that we wanted it to be. And, but it's interesting, like talking to, I remember when we first, decided like, okay, we're going to do this. This is going to be our business. And I know, couple guys, one guy from Colgate, one guy I know from my hometown who are multimillionaires, self-made. And so I called them for advice. And I mean, their idea of success was so different than what ours was. And I remember the one guy was like, well, you know, if you're not going to be able to sell the company in 5 years for this much of a gross and blah, 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 MBA speak that Sarah can't even understand, you know, then really why do it? And I was like, oh yeah, well, cause I really like running and I like talking to people and it's going to be fun, you know? Right. And so,
yeah, I don't want to sell it,
but can you go to scale? Can you scale it?
Oh yeah. I mean, all those things. And so that, you know, we, being, you know, we went to a liberal arts college. We don't have a lot of practical experience in these things, but somehow we, at our very core, I mean, Dim was very adamant early on that we would not do or sell or pitch or anything that we ourselves wouldn't use or make our lives better. And so that was kind of our North Star for the whole thing. And so, you know, and thankfully it worked. And also, like, sometimes we'll be talking to, you know, we have marketing partners and we'll be telling them kind of what we do, which seemed like the sensible thing. And they're like, you know, well, that's exactly the way we're trying to approach, you know, how do you get that authentic engagement with your community? And we're like, oh yeah, those words again, like that's just who we are and how we operate. It's not like some, like, that's what we do because that's the trendy thing in the Fortune or Inc. or whatever is telling you to do it.
Yeah, being authentic is a really great way to seem authentic. That's a hard message to get across sometimes.
Yeah. So, and you know, it helps that Dim and I are very different athletes, very different people. And so, you know, we used to kind of joke that there's Team Dimity and Team Sarah. And so that if people saw themselves as a Dimity type runner, then, you know, so they were totally drawn to that whole, you know, kind of area within AMR. And then, you know, maybe you're a little bit more, you know, focused on the clock or whatever it was that I was at the time. You know, 8 years, things have changed for me. But so we just kind of represented, even though there were just two of us at the time, we were able to represent a fairly wide swath of women runners who are not collegiate athletes.
Well, this ties in a little bit with our social media guru, Anna Brooks's question, which she wanted me to ask you, which is, and it's because of your optimism and your geography and also just the way you are as a person, this may not apply, but if you have days where you don't feel like running or you just can't fit it in or life gets in the way, have you ever said to yourself, because of the business of AMR, sort of the community that you've built, the level at which you're operating, does it drive you to run to have sort of, I don't know if it's street cred or whatnot with it? Yeah. Or is it that no, every single time you go, it's a personal enjoyment thing and that's just what you do? Or do you feel that pressure because of what you've built?
You know, I don't feel I, you know, people may want to throw rotten tomatoes at me, but I genuinely love being outside and being with my best running friend, Molly, and feeling alive.
Yeah.
And so that's what gets me out there. But in terms of the times when I feel that being one of the leaders of another mother runner is where I'm aware of carrying a torch like that,
yeah,
is in a race oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And that I remember the time that I was trying to you know, definitely the two times that I was specifically trying to qualify for Boston, I just felt like, oh my gosh, there are a lot of virtual eyes on me, and I really have to strive to perform at my best to kind of carry forth the hopes and dreams of the people who are watching me.
And was that beyond a level of what you would have done for yourself if it had just been you sort of isolated? Do you think it did something different for you mentally?
I definitely, you'll be reminded that I now live on the West Coast. I definitely can feel the strength and power and goodwill of all the people within the Another Mother Runner community when I'm out there doing things or when I'm injured. This is where I'll get a little woo-woo and leave my Connecticut upbringing behind. That I fractured my ankle, my right ankle, in four places in 2015. And had to have pins and plates and everything put in. And I didn't hear my doctors when they said it, but they definitely thought there was a chance that I would never run again. But I was still groggy from the anesthesia, so I didn't hear them. So, and I just felt such warmth and support and positivity from mother runners that I honestly believe in my heart and mind that they helped my ankle get back to full recovery. And, you know, I've since run two marathons. And so I only feel the power of the tribe in a very positive way. I don't feel it as a, onerous burden.
Well, that's incredible, Sarah. And, similarly here, we, have Brian almost back from hip surgery where, he hopes to be running again. Actually, by the time this airs, he will be running. You know what? By the time this airs, Brian,
I will have run a full 180 seconds.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Welcome back.
Nice.
Five months off.
But the community here has been very strong in that support. So,
you get what I mean, Brian. I mean, it's just, I held it together when I was just explaining that. I mean, but definitely I got very teary-eyed when I think about it. And I am not, I don't know. I'm not a super woo-woo person, but I definitely believe it. And I felt it from, you know, we have, there's mother runners in our tribe all across the world, in Canada, Australia, parts of Europe, Asia, whatever. And I mean, I felt it from all the corners of the earth that they were just triangulating their power toward Portland, Oregon to make my ankle get better.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I had a little back and forth. It didn't have anything to do with the community. It had to do with me, where I kind of shut down for a little while and just said, I'm not looking at social media. It's hard to have a weekly running podcast when you're not running at all. So I would listen to Peter's stories as he was training mm-hmm. for this 5K as a guide for a blind runner. And mm-hmm. That sort of brought me back. And also just, you know, going out and seeing other runners. We had an event at a running store this winter that kind of turned things around. Just being around people so excited to be training. They were all training for the Boston Marathon, or most of them anyway. And it was just great. It's great to be around other people who are excited to be running and to be moving their bodies and say, you know what, it's going to be a few months, but I'll be out there again. And
also,
it kind of pulled me back.
And I also definitely, you know, those 5 months that you've been off in the long scheme of your life are going to seem like a blip on the radar. And that, you know, so you kind of have to get a 30,000 foot view and be like, yes, for right now I can't run, but, you know, it's all going to be in my rearview mirror soon enough. And I also really am a big believer in not you know, kind of wishing ill on people who are doing what you want to be doing and being envious of them, or jealous of them. I, suffered from secondary infertility. And, you know, so whenever somebody would be like, oh, I'm so excited, I just got pregnant, I'd be always be like, oh, that's awesome. Like, I'm so excited for you. And I would think to myself, they're pregnant now, and one day in the future, I'll be pregnant again too. So, and now I have, you know, twins plus my older daughter. Right. So, yeah.
So don't get pregnant now. Stop now.
Are you talking to me or Sarah?
Yes.
Okay.
To myself. We're all set. We're fine.
We're all parents here.
Yeah, we got to where we wanted to be. We're good.
And yeah. I was just going to say, yeah, boy, if I got angry or jealous at every person who ran by, watching the Boston Marathon would have been really, really difficult. So you have to take it in a positive way, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And there's this woman in my neighborhood who's a mother runner and a cyclist, and she fractured her, like totally shattered her pelvis on a ride. And but that was a number of years, I don't know, 3 years maybe before I fractured my ankle. And I remember so vividly on my crutches or whatever, looking out my dining room window and seeing her run or cycle by. And I'd just think, there goes Tawny. At one point, Tawny, like, you know, was confined to her bed, and now look at her. And so, you know, give it time, and I'm going to be out there just like she is.
That's right.
Yeah, I have a very similar story. I had gone to a workout. I work out with this group, November Project. I know there's one in Portland. And so I was at a Boston workout with crutches on a snowy day. I wasn't doing anything. I was just watching, but I needed to be around people who were exercising and running. And one of the things that just lit me up completely was seeing a friend of mine taking his first running steps 5 months after fracturing his leg bones. So he had come through that, and he had been walking and took his first running steps during that workout. And I just thought, oh my goodness, that's going to be me soon. This is great. It's really uplifting to see people coming back from injury, because almost always you can come back.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and my business partner, Dimity, she, had been sidelined for off and on. That's part of, you know, Team Dimity, people who get injured a fair bit, they see themselves a lot in her, and that she's always come back. And then last year she finally, realized that maybe she wouldn't be able to come back. And so, you know, it was definitely, she went through a period of mourning and just kind of had to get right with it all. But for her, what really sustains her, and she's now back running a little bit, is being able to cheer people on. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you have not been encouraged in a race until you have felt Dimity's big hand smack on your back and be like, yeah, way to go, mother runner. She has a lot of exuberance. Yeah.
All right, Sarah, I have a couple race-related questions to ask you.
Yes, sir.
First one is, I am scheduled the weekend after 4th of July to run the Utica Boilermaker 15.
The Boilermaker 15, you know that's the race for me.
Have you ever done that race?
I have not. I certainly know it because Utica is only about 30 minutes from Colgate, but I have never run it, no.
The second question I have to ask you. There's a little race that we like to go up in the northern part of Maine. It's called the Millinocket Marathon. Perhaps you've heard of it.
Where's the finish line? Which way to the finish line? You can't get there from here.
I feel like part of the club now because you're going to ask me if I'd run it, aren't you?
Well, I'm just curious if you've already booked your accommodations for this.
Because it's getting tight.
Yeah, it's getting tight now. I hope you December. Have a room. So if you could just, you know, right after this, hop off and find a little Airbnb, because you could be the honorary guest at the Crankle, the third annual running of the Crankle the night before the race, which is a little shakeout run we organize. Just say you're going. That'd be great.
I am going to look at my schedule and, you know, my people will talk to your people.
We love it. I mean, anything you can do. Michael right now is doing cartwheels. I can guarantee it.
You know, you can always register. It's a free marathon.
Free marathon.
So there's not much to lose.
Boston qualifier, free marathon.
Guaranteed great weather.
Yeah, around the 9th or 10th.
December, I know. Yeah.
December. Just think about that.
Well, let me rephrase that. There's guaranteed to be weather.
There will be some weather, yeah. Yeah.
And I do have to point out that Maine is incredibly far from Oregon. It is.
It's like the upside down.
Well, they're like Oregon. They're like sister states.
Yeah, it's a lot like it.
Yeah.
My city was named after, you know, they decided the name of this city in a coin toss, and it was between Boston, one fellow wanted Boston, and one wanted Portland, and the guy who won Portland obviously won the coin toss, and that is a true story.
Well, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, please, you got to study Portland history in third grade, and I have seen that play. Kids write a play at my kid's school, and so, yep, I've seen it reenacted.
So Providence didn't have a shot.
Is it not? They heard about all the corruption charges that were coming its way, and they're like, no, we want to stay away from that. Yeah, there's going to be a whole podcast about that.
Oh, boy, we're going to get some emails.
Well, because there was no corruption issues early in Portland's history, I'm sure. I took the underground Shanghai tour. I know everything that happened in that city. It's had its dark days.
It's sunny right now, but we still sometimes have some dark days. You know, there's all sorts of illicit things going on.
So now, do I have it right? You guys have done. What number show are you up to?
We just passed 300. I think we're coming up on, I think we're recording 309 tomorrow.
Holy cow. Congratulations to that.
Thank you.
So the question I have on the heels of that factoid is, what was the, other than this, what was the best interview you ever experienced?
Oh, gosh. That's an interesting question. Gosh, can we cut out how long I might have to be thinking about this, or can we play some music during it?
We're going to play the Jeopardy music.
Yeah, and we're going to slow it down, actually. We're going to turn the voice down like this one.
Peter and I will just have a side conversation.
So while Sarah tries to figure out.
What kind of compression socks do you think are the best, Peter?
The funny part is she probably doesn't remember any of the interviews. She's like, wait.
I remember. But see, I want something big.
No, it doesn't have to be big.
It's the things. Perhaps one of my favorite episodes is with a green chef, this woman in whose name escapes me right now. She's in Colorado. And it's the reason it was so fun was because she and my co-host Molly, who, as I mentioned, is also my best running friend, they just had such a rapport, and we just laughed and laughed and laughed. And because I love nothing better than a tangent. And so we just got on some ridiculous tangents, I don't know, about like turmeric and like band names and raised beds, like for plant. I don't know. It sounds so dull. And
How early on was it? Do you remember roughly where
it was? It was between 200 and 300 because it was part. Okay. So when we hit the hundreds, so 100, 200, 300, we do best of shows. Mm-hmm. And so that was included in one of the two. Now at 200, we have to do 200, 201, 300, 301, and break it up into two best ofs. I mean, Bart Yasso is always a delightful guest to have on. And he's been on maybe four times or three times. And one question that you guys asked me early on when it was sort of like, when did you sort of know, like, okay, that it was a business? For me, when I knew the podcast thing might really – take off was when Bart Yasso was on, and he was like maybe on like the eighth show or something, and we had met him at the Ogden Marathon, and we'd all three of us had been speakers, and which made us just feel like really big deals. Made me and Dim, I don't think it made Bart feel like any bigger of a deal, even though we're both taller than Bart, and just had to get that in there. And I don't know, I just was like, oh my gosh, like Bart seems to know who we are. And we've had Catherine Switzer on twice. We had Kara Goucher on. We had Chrissy Turlington of Every Mother Counts. We did a really, really fun one of the shows that we did down at Goo headquarters was just last month. We had Magdalena Louis-Boulay, and who's, Olympian, and then also Olympian, multi-time Olympian, Alicia Montaño. And, oh, my gosh, we just had a lot of laughs with that one. So,
Did I mention we've had Michael Goff on this show?
Yeah, Michael Goff has actually been on our show. Has he been on your show?
He has not.
Yeah, so let's just talk about priorities.
Did you just dab me, Brian?
Mm. Oh, he did. The face he made. Not okay. Not okay.
We did use, though, when we interviewed, we have had a mutual guest. We had Kelly Roberts on not long ago.
Yes.
And that was the first one of your shows that I listened to was when Kelly was on, because Michael's like, oh, you gotta listen to this episode. And he might have had a lower voice when he said that.
Probably not.
He was pretty excited.
But when I asked Michael if he had any questions that he wanted to ask Kelly, and I did use one of his questions.
Did you attribute him, though?
I think I did. I definitely talked to him on that podcast.
Good call. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I give Kelly about 6 months, and she'll have recorded more podcasts than all of us combined, because she's rolling out like five a week.
She did three today.
Yeah.
While we recorded this one, she's done three.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, and I do have to share one funny anecdote. So definitely people listen to our back catalog a lot, you know, mm-hmm. so they'll find us and then they go back and listen to it all. And I'm not explaining that to you guys. I'm explaining it to the people who are listening, because I know you know what a back catalog is. Heard from a woman recently via email, and she had just found another mother runner. And so she was starting at the beginning of our podcast, which makes me shudder.
Does that freak you out? Because it freaks us out. It happens to us too. And we're like, what are you doing?
Oh my gosh. I couldn't even begin to go back and listen to the early ones. But get this. It's as if we are like, I don't know, The Walking Dead or something. She wouldn't allow herself to listen to the current ones because she didn't want spoilers. So I'm like, well, you know what? It's not Scandal. You can actually.
But that's true, right? You haven't broken your ankle
yet. Right. I mean, if you sustain the injury, do you ever run again? It is suspense. Right. You have a story arc that leads its way through.
You can't just start seeing Negan and being like, wait, how did they find Negan?
I wish I knew what you were talking about.
Exactly. I don't get that reference.
No, I have no idea.
It's a Walking Dead reference, and four people got it, and it's going to be huge.
Walking Dead scares the bejesus out of me, and I cannot watch it. The other night, my husband was watching it, and I walked into the room. I'm like, no, turn it off. And I can't even – he was then watching The Talking Dead. I couldn't even listen to that.
Oh, yeah, the famous talk show afterwards.
Yeah. So she said, oh, yeah, so I'm listening back catalog. I'm at, like, episode whatever, 153 or whatever. And I'm like, oh, you know, how old are my kids in it? And she's like, oh, your twins are in third grade. And I'm like, spoiler alert, they're in seventh grade now?
That's great.
So it is a little bit like a time capsule. And I oftentimes cast my mind forward and think about, like, if there ever comes a day when I can be retired. And, I keep letters that people actually – my address is on the Another Mother Runner website. And so sometimes, like, people will, on occasion, actually snail mail us, which I love.
Yeah, that's great.
And so I keep those. And so I daydream about a day when, you know, some rainy Sunday afternoon, I'm going to take those out, have a cup of tea, listen to some old podcasts, read some of the letters, you know, probably then call Dimity and be like, hi, Dimity.
We have to record this week's show.
Right.
So that's kind of a nice thought experiment. So wait a minute. How old are your kids currently?
So I have a daughter who's 16 and my boy-girl twins are 12 and a half.
All right. Now I have a son and I only have one and he's 14. Mm-hmm. Brian has two daughters.
Mm-hmm. 17 and almost 14.
And the question I have for any of us is, mm-hmm. do any of them actually listen to our respective shows?
My kids don't listen to it. One of Phoebe's, my older daughter, she has a friend who's listened to a couple of them. And then my son was a guest on the podcast once. We did a show about kids and running.
Oh, excellent.
And maybe I should have said that was my favorite, because he and I just laughed ourselves silly on that one.
We'll say that was that one. Okay. Yeah, right. Go. You're great.
Edit that in, yeah.
We'll drop it right in.
Yeah. Do your guys' kids listen to you?
No, I can't say they do, although some of my girls' friends have revealed that they listen from time to time. So that has been very interesting.
Well, both your girls have been on.
Both of my girls have been on. Kate came on to talk about being a coxswain, and Skylar talked about running and mm-hmm. cross-country and running to get ice cream on the last day of cross-country practice. So that was fun.
Right, and I referenced Daniel quite a bit, but I guarantee you he's never listened to the show.
No.
He's not interested because he plays baseball and he's a catcher. And I think he runs too slow when he actually hits the ball. So He won't.
Well, he's still trying to get the blood back into his legs after squatting for an hour. Crouching.
But I often wonder, you know, if it's going to be 10 years from now, 15 years from now, will he go back and listen? Because if I could go back and listen to my father for, you know, hundreds of episodes of something, I think I would.
So when our kids are in their mid-40s and going on a road trip somewhere, they will listen to
this.
They'll
probably listen to one.
Yeah, but I think then we also need to make sure that it's a technology that will be able to be, you know, is it going to be some wave technology that they can just, like, stick their finger in the air and have it be transmitted to their chip in their head or something? Like,
yeah, they'll just think about it and it'll appear.
Right on a screen.
No, we'll have to. No, we have to go through a process of putting all these shows on a wax cylinder.
There we go.
And you use the sundial to power the machine that plays it.
I do have to say that Molly, again, how many times can I reference Molly? Can I just say Molly and people will know who she is now? She has three daughters, and her, at least two of them, listen to Another Mother Runner podcast. And, they'll critique it, and it's pretty funny what they'll say about it. So when Molly and I talk about our found change obsession, you know, how much money we find on the road while we're running.
So awesome.
They'll be like, Mom, you talked about way too long. I just fast-forwarded through that.
What's the largest amount of money you found on a run?
Well, I have to put an asterisk by that. I last month found $44, but it was in a wallet that
Doesn't count.
That I returned to the gentleman.
Of course,
yeah.
You have to.
Wow.
And get this, one, I was like obsessed with returning it to this kid. He was a college student because his college ID was in the wallet. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I have to get message to this. I have to get word to this guy. And I got word to him about midday. And then he came and picked it up that evening. And he said, oh yeah, I didn't even realize it was missing until you told me. I'm like, are you kidding me? I would have been out of my mind.
I had the exact same experience. I found an iPod while running. And this was, I guess, it wasn't before iPhones, but this person had all kinds of photos on it, all kinds of stuff. I didn't look at anything. I just basically tried to find the email that was associated with it. So I went into settings, got the email, wrote it. Turns out, you know, it was like a high school kid locally. Right. And same thing. I emailed her for maybe 3 weeks straight. Finally got a response. Oh, you can just get rid of it or whatever. I've already replaced it. And
and
my dad, Gene, I almost responded in the email. Do you realize I have your entire life here in my hand in your little cracked iPod? You're so glad that I found it and not somebody else. But what did I do? I just gave it a factory reset.
And now it's in your kitchen.
I don't know where it is now. I mean, that was a while ago. That was a few years ago. But boy, there was a lot on there, I'm sure.
It's in your kitchen.
Oh my gosh. Well, I do have to brag. Molly found $100 when she was running without me. Yeah,
You can't verify that.
No, she and her oldest daughter were running together on Easter Sunday, years ago, and she thought she saw a 20, and then as she got closer, she realized it was a wad of 20s,
Jesus' money.
Is that the Easter
it's
miracle?
The Easter bunnies.
That's the Easter bunny.
So definitely, we always remember the Easter miracle every Easter.
That's really good.
Yeah, so and she used it to pay for – she was running with her daughter Lane, and Lane was wanting to do her first marathon, and so Molly used the money to pay the entry fee for Lane's first marathon.
Nice.
Yeah. So it went to good uses. Yeah, so I don't spend the money I find. It's just the joy of finding it. So I just keep it in jars in my closet.
I love that.
Thank you.
I keep a collection of things I find on my way to and from work. I walk to work. It's about 3 miles each way, and –
wow.
I have a wide assortment, including a really nice Phillips screwdriver that I keep in my desk drawer.
And I did find, speaking of you guys, I found in a snowstorm in Boston in like February probably of 93, I found a $5 bill just skittering down the sidewalk right in front of the Boston Public Library.
There it is, right at the finish line, right there.
Yep. And and then I found a $50 bill out at a convenience store, right outside a convenience store, maybe in Newton or not Arlington. What's the other city that begins with an A right outside of Boston? Maybe it is Arlington. I don't know.
Let's say it's Arlington.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, but I still have that $5 bill and that $50 bill.
You literally keep the bills.
Correct. Yeah, and I have because what's ever big enough, momentous enough for me to buy with that, you know?
Well, that's your retirement
you're
fund
there
right
yet.
There.
Yeah,
the AMR retirement fund.
Yeah. Right. The wax cylinder machine that we're going to need that we'll rent from you.
Right. Because I'm not going to sell this and be a multimillionaire like my guy entrepreneur friends.
So while we're running down this bizarre road, I will share something that I've never told anybody before, which is I had this streak of about maybe 2 years where I was finding handwritten shopping lists in the street, in grocery carriages,
sure.
In odd places. And, you know, sometimes it would be like ant traps and light bulbs. And other times it would be, you know, all the things that they were going to buy, lettuce and avocados and bread and coffee, and then odd notes to remind themselves to do things within the shopping list. And then I found what was clearly notes taken by the patient during their therapy visit, written on, you know, a skinny little scrap of paper that looked like a shopping list. And I think that was the last one. It got really strange. You really get very intimate with people that you don't know and will never meet by what they're going to buy or what they write on little scraps of paper and carry around.
Oh my gosh. And if you were a huge celebrity, you'd be able to publish all of those. And that would be your whole book. And it would sell like, it would be on the New York Times bestseller list. And you would have had to do nothing but find those.
Sarah, why do you think we started this podcast?
Right.
When I become a large enough celebrity through How Was Your Run Today, I will publish that scrap book.
And I was going to publish a book of...
Did you catch that? I'm calling it the scrap book. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Quick, buy the URL.
Done. Kelly Roberts already owns it.
I'm going to do a fitness nutrition book that's the found shopping list buyer's guide, and you have to buy everything that you see on the list. So sometimes it's light bulbs and avocados.
Ouch.
Yeah. But I bet you lose weight.
You would. Especially if you don't find any lists for a while. You'd just be standing outside
of
shopping centers like, why does everybody use their phone these days?
I do tend to use my phone more than anything else, although I have written a few things down.
I tell my kids that if they want something from Trader Joe's, they send me one text. I do not want a text that's avocado, yellow pepper, like, you know, 20 different texts.
Yeah,
it has to be one long string.
It's one and done. If you can't get it in, you're not getting it this time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, Sarah, this has been an amazingly insightful look into the world of AMR. And
I think we've learned a lot.
I know I have.
We've been schooled about what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong.
Yeah, which is most things.
I wasn't going to say that, but that's obvious.
That's fine.
I think our audience knows that they can figure that out.
They definitely know. Yeah.
They've already switched allegiances.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm going to switch over to AMR. Here I go.
Yeah.
Wait, before we let you go, I can't believe it's been this long, because we're almost, I don't know, are we an hour in?
I think we've run out of wax cylinder, yeah.
Right, so put it on a new cylinder.
Shipped a new cylinder.
Sarah, if I may ask you, how was your run today?
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. I was sitting there thinking like, okay, these guys didn't formulate any questions ahead of time. I love that. I'm glad I didn't prepare for this interview. And then I thought, oh, they didn't ask me that question because that's the question I debated how I would answer. I did not run today. What I've been concealing is that I'm a phony. No, that I have not run this entire month because I have what, if I run on it, would turn into plantar fasciitis, and I'm just not willing to go there.
That's no joke.
Yeah, so I had that in 2011, and it's all tied to the Royals because I had it very badly when Prince, gosh, why am I blanking? What's Kate's husband's name?
William.
When Kate and William got married, I had it very bad. I did a half marathon. I did the Rock and Roll Nashville, and oh, that was agony on my foot. And so I went in late March. I did two runs in shoes that weren't supportive enough on the beach and on the coast here in Oregon. And it just kind of, I have very high arches, boring. And so it strained my feet a little bit. So I have taken the month of April off from running. So I did a 5:30 cycle bar class, and I had a great workout. And there was a mother runner two bikes away from me, and talking about the feeling, the energy, and the strength from the tribe. Definitely knowing she was there and kind of, you know, knowing that we were kind of pitted against each other on the leaderboard was very inspiring for me.
That's great. That's a terrific answer. And just so you know, I mean, more often than not, when we ask each other, either one of us says, well, I haven't run yet today, or because it's either going to be a little bit later on, or there's a rest day, or there's an injury on the offing. My run was fabulous. I had a killer 3.2 in a brand new pair of shoes.
And we finally rolled into a little bit of decent, sunny, warm weather.
Yeah. It wasn't freezing. And it was
nice.
It was a morning run.
Yeah. I'll be doing that run walk thing when I go back to it. I think next week, maybe the week after that. So, I want to bank this. I don't want to throw this month away. So I want to make sure that my feet are good and ready for me to be back out there again.
Well, in the vein of your show, the TMI situation, I'm rocking a brand new planter's wart, which is really fun.
Oh, gosh, those are so painful and just downright nasty.
Well, it's interesting. It's not excruciating. It's noticeable to the point where I had thought maybe for the first 5 or 6 days, well, this is probably just a weird callus. It's something going on in my shoe. But I think not. I think this is the early stages, so I'm quickly trying to treat it. And because I had had one back in my youth. God, for a year or more, and then I finally took care of it, and it was fine. Catch it early if you can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I also, for my plantar fasciitis, I didn't know what it would feel like or anything, so I didn't know what was going on, and so I definitely ran on it back in 2011 way, way, way too long. I mean, I did three half marathons to become a half marathon fanatic, I mean, it was, My stride was just severely compromised by it. So if that was a 9 on the Richter scale, this time it's been like barely a 1. So, I lived through the 89 earthquake in San Francisco, so I know from those things.
Yeah, so. you have a scale by which you can judge.
Yeah, and the big one's going to hit any day now here in Portland. So,
Do you think that's true?
Oh, yes, most definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Do I do anything other than
do you have an evacuation plan?
What I hope is that my whole family's together. I don't want it to be like my kids are off, one's at the ball, one's I did just the other night think that we should get a rain barrel for water. And I got to tell you though, I am the house to come to because I have so much goo for our Train Like a Mother Club swag bags.
Yeah.
So I got carbs to spare over here and enough noon to turn that, puddles into tasty beverages.
So party at your house when the big one hits.
And do you keep a bathtub filled at all times?
We do not. That sounds like my dad during power outages in Connecticut. Well, we can flush the toilets.
Yeah,
here in Oregon, we don't flush the toilets except when absolutely necessary. No,
let it mellow. It's fine.
And as I always remind my family, last time I checked, the toilet's not plugged in, so when the power's out, we can still use the toilet. I don't know what the bathtub full of water is for, but that's all right.
Yeah.
But people seem to think it's important.
I think it's about the water main not being usable so that you're not going to get any water in.
Which is going to happen when the power goes out?
No, that happens in The Walking Dead.
Right, precisely.
To bring that
back
all.
To the Dead.
Okay, well, now that you've cleared that up, thank you.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show. Congratulations on reaching well over 300. Congrats on that.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure, a true delight, guys.
Well, thank you, and thank you for almost verbaling on Millinocket. We're not going to hold you to it, but we are.
We are. We'll expect you.
I know Michael will. Michael take care of it for us. He's going to call you right after this, so don't worry.
Right. He's got text me. Yep, I know it.
And, of course, open invitation. If you're ever back on the East Coast for any reason, we definitely would love to sit down with you in person and trade war stories.
I would love that, and then I'd get to meet Anna as well.
And she would love that, and thank you so much for... Thank you so much for the community you've built.
Aw, yeah. So should I tell people how to find it?
Let's not get crazy. Your audience is huge. We're small. Don't worry about it. No, of course. What's the best way for people to find you?
Go to Another Mother Runner. Notice how I went down. I'm sorry, that was flat ground. Another Mother Runner.
Do it the way I do. It's fun.
Go to anothermotherrunner.com.
That sounds terrible.
Look for our podcast on iTunes or whatever podcast server you get. Yeah, trainlikeamother.club. I'm at SBS on the run on Twitter. We're at the Mother Runner on Instagram. So yeah, lots of ways to connect.
Fun. We'll certainly spread the word. And thanks again. Brian, any last thoughts?
We're breaking the tape on a fantastic interview. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Go buy wax cylinders.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Hey. This has been episode 130 of How Was Your Run Today? Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
With Brian Gould and Peter Villa. Music by Jeff Cronenberg. He's like a mother to me, Brian. Anna Brooks is our social media guru. Andrea Bonnie Gould is our artist in residence.
Both of them are mothers.
They sure are.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day. You know, speaking of that artist in residence, Brian, she's created a unique, exclusive piece of art for my Utica Boilermaker 15K.
Do you mean that sweet, sweet singlet that everyone listening to this should just drop their podcast on the floor and go purchase right now?
Yeah, run, don't walk. How was your run to the singlet? Go get it. Go buy it. It's on Custom Ink. We have links. We got links all over the place.
Links on the website.
And social media. Here's the story. Even if you're not going to the race, buy one. It's pretty.
It's a commemorative shirt for a race that Peter and many other Hywartians are doing. And the whole thing is we can't get a single one printed if we don't sell, 47 of them?
It's 48.
So we have to sell 48 to get even one. Do you understand this mathematics, Peter?
I know. I don't like it. But it's a five-color print job, and they're very picky about when they'll print and when they won't. And on this particular kind of shirt, they got to hit 48.
And frankly, they're pretty cheap.
They're pretty. $20. $20. Yeah. But if you are going to the Boilermaker or if you have friends going to the Boilermaker, this is a no-brainer. Buy it.
Yeah, if you have a friend who has never listened to the show, but you listen to the show and they're running the Boilermaker, buy it for them.
And then we'll run up to them. Igor and I will run up and hug them and get them all sweaty and weird and we'll take a photo. We'll do a thing.
That's so disturbing. Now I think I want to go.
I know you do. No, my dream is to get the 20 or 30 or 48 people who are going to be there in these singlets and do a massive picture at the end.
Everyone buy one. That's 48 contiguous states. Everyone from every state should buy one.
Yeah, Hawaii and Alaska, you're off the hook.
They're fine.
You wait till the next round.
Yeah, they're not going to fly to Utica anyway.
No, they got too many things going
on. It's too far.
Yeah. Well, let's be clear, though. Sorry. Caveat. We're not making any money here. This is literally the cost of them being printed. Like, just buy the shirt. You're helping me cover my body.
On this Saturday and all Saturdays going forward, you can join us with our Stat Chat. Go to any social media platform and tell us where you ran, how the weather was, and please include a sweet, sweet photo, and hopefully some of those photos will include a singlet from the Boilermaker 15K.
That'd be so awesome. It's got five colors in it, Brian. Five colors. That's rare. Huge thank you to the original Another Mother Runner, Sarah Bowen Shea. Brian?
Yes.
You look good.
Thank you.
I'm going to go out for a run now. Talk to you soon.
If you can run for 4 minutes, I'll join you.
Yeah, you're up to four now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Good stuff.
Happy Mother's Day. Fill that bathtub with water.
I think you should.
I don't know why you would
just
do that.
Just to flush the toilet. Sometimes things
why? The water is going to keep flowing.
One of those fancy ones. It's like a fountain, and it's powered.
Okay.
That could be it.
You have a Japanese toilet there?
Yeah.
I might. Listen.
Those all have battery backup.
Bidets are no jokes. I like a bidet. How was your run, bidet? I've been waiting 130 episodes to make that joke.
How was your run, bidet?